Welcome back to Modern Politics. I'm Warren Balog.
And I'm Emily Yukis.
We're just coming out of the second week of January 2025, and today we're going to dive into Project Esther, which is this plan put out by the so-called conservative think tank, the Heritage Foundation. We covered this some on this previous week's war strike. Stryker and I delved into it a little bit, but there were some aspects of it that I want to dig into a little more deeply. I should note that this was released back in October 7th of 2024. And at the time, I had a number of people send it to me who were supporters of our show and others. And I thought about talking about it then, but we didn't know at the time whether or not Trump was even going to get elected. And it just sort of seemed like kind of a thing to rally donors, Jewish donors around Trump. But now he is in. He is lining up a whole cabinet of Zionist neocon war hawks, and actually his attorney general nominee, which was Matt Gaetz, was replaced by this woman, Pam Bondi, who is on record saying that the FBI should be investigating any American who expresses sympathy for Hamas, just foreign students living in the United States.
Oh, wonderful.
Before we dive into that, we can say a word about the Heritage Foundation itself. For anybody who doesn't know, the Heritage Foundation is this very powerful think tank in Washington. They are the ones, this election cycle, they were most famous for being behind Project 2025. They have a 2022 revenue of $106 million for a think tank.
Yeah.
So very well-funded, very powerful. They actually were founded in 1973 during the Nixon administration. And during the Reagan administration, they became very famous because they released in 1981 this sort of blueprint for the Reagan presidency called Mandate for Leadership. Mm-hmm. And this is why people on the left were getting all scared about Project 2025. In fact, I want to play this clip from Sky News just discussing the Mandate for Leadership and the role that the Heritage Foundation played in Ronald Reagan's administration.
Heritage came to prominence when the organization wrote their first manifesto in 1981. They called it a Mandate for Leadership. Essentially, it aimed to roll back the state and unleash free market capitalism. President Ronald Reagan liked the idea so much that he gave a copy to each member of his cabinet to review. The Heritage Foundation claims that among the 2,000 proposals, about 60% of them were implemented by the end of President Reagan's first year in office.
It's no exaggeration to say that you've more than made your mark on American history. Tonight, I thank you, Heritage thanks you, and so does the conservative movement.
So yeah, hugely influential think tank in Republican politics, and really in many ways responsible for all the rollback of government regulation in the 1980s that led to the era of unfettered capitalism that has since completely destroyed the middle class in America.
Right, yeah.
So these guys are not good. Now, Project 2025 was making headlines during the Kamala Trump campaign, and a lot of people who were sort of adjacent to us who were supporting Trump were pointing to proposals in Project 2025 about rolling back, you know, gender theory and
mass deportations.
All the
stuff that we really, really wish would happen.
Right.
Really, really wish would come true. And of course, then Trump did the thing that he does where he flip flops. He's working with these guys. Oh, but no, now he has nothing to do with it. And it's like, what is going to happen?
Right. I personally believe, and I feel very safe in making this prediction, that all of the based stuff in Project 2025 was there to create excitement on the right. As we know, there was a huge effort spearheaded by Elon Musk and the PayPal mafia and Peter Thiel in Silicon Valley to loosen up free speech and sort of recapture some of that meme energy that helped propel Trump over the finish line in 2016, but which was not there, which was not present in 2020. It was kicked out of the MAGA campaign. It was all about the Platinum Plan, and
everyone on 4chan had already basically abandoned Trump.
Right.
Everyone, when he didn't deliver in the first term, pretty much everybody on the far right, real white nationalists, have lost faith in him.
Yes. And we saw more people this time around. I think there were more white nationalists or white nationalist adjacent people. Right-wing Twitter, you know, that's not explicitly WN, but around there, gathering momentum and steam to get Trump in.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the point is that I think that the things that were good in Project 2025 were there as bait to get people to sign on, and all the media controversy over it and the Democrats saying how racist it is was really just part of the Trump campaign's PR plan, and you know, Trump officially distances himself from it. But if you look at the rest of the proposals in it, it's all just the same kind of Reaganite unleashing big business on America, deregulating capitalism and that sort of thing. So I think just as with Reagan, we're going to get all the social stuff we're not going to get so much of, all the economic stuff that's just giveaways to corporations and corruption and capitalism we're going to see.
As if we need any more unfettered, unregulated capitalism. I mean, as we pointed out in previous episodes, the wealth disparity is at record levels.
Yes, this is the greatest disparity between the super rich and everyone else that it has exceeded the Gilded Age, the height of the robber baron era.
The freaking Gilded Age.
Yes, this is the era of the Rockefellers and the Carnegies and all those people. The top billionaires today are greater in terms of their wealth, and the super rich are, there's more of a gap between them and everyone else than there was at the peak of the Gilded Age. And of course, as we all know, this time they are not goys like Rockefeller and Carnegie. This time they are all, a lot of them are Jews. I mean, a good like quarter to half of them are Jews. And this is really what this is all about. So the Heritage Foundation now, they launched something called the National Task Force to Combat Anti-Semitism less than 2 months after the October 7th attack in Israel.
Yeah.
Well, I'll just let the Heritage Foundation, let's hear from them describe what it is.
We are launching this National Task Force to monitor and combat anti-Semitism. Our vision is to coalesce institutional Christian and Jewish organizational leaders to monitor the current and future rise of anti-Semitic trends, establish metrics and joint action items to combat the rise of anti-Semitism, and establish a coalition to defend the Jewish people and to provide a firewall to counter this rise of anti-Semitism in America. The objective of the task force is to link together organizations to facilitate information sharing, crisis response, establish working groups to develop action plans for the next 12 months and beyond, identifying, highlighting, combating malicious activities and actors directing and significantly contributing to this anti-Semitic activity in the United States.
To just give one more example, here is a one of the YouTube shorts. Mm-hmm. From the Heritage Foundation. This is on their channel.
Yeah.
About it's a lawyer talking about civil rights law, and it's talking about invoking Title VI of U.S. civil rights law against people who are, well, against colleges that allow pro-Palestinian protests. Now, we covered this in a past episode, what a weird twist and inversion this is of the law. But essentially what it's doing is it's taking Title VI of U.S. civil rights law, which is a horrible, horrible anti-white piece of legislation. It's unconstitutional according to the First Amendment, the right to free assembly and free speech and free. It's the thing that broke down housing, schools. It was the wedge that was used during the 60s and 70s to integrate, at the point of a gun, at the you know, with a bayonet in their backs,
literally.
To integrate white American schools and unleash hordes of violent blacks on little white kids in schools all across America, break up white neighborhoods and everything else. So here you have the Heritage Foundation, formed during the Nixon administration, which should be, I mean, they're all against DEI and critical race theory.
Oh, yeah.
They should be, if they were anything actually worth anything to white people, the first target that they should be trying to attack and roll back is the anti-white civil rights legislation of the 1960s that forced integration on the country. Instead, here they are invoking that principle, invoking those laws, to criminalize anti-Israel protest on campuses. Here's what they had to say.
Civil rights law ensures that Jewish students, like every other religiously and ethnically protected group, deserves the civil rights protection. But when you have organizations engaging in behavior that is not just anti-Semitic, but it is often illegal behavior. So when a university fails to actually take appropriate responses, that is a violation of the civil rights of those Jewish students. Students that are engaged in pro-terrorist activities should be deported. Unfortunately, numerous universities refuse to turn over the information documenting which of these visiting students have been involved because the universities fear that those students will indeed be deported. The United States federal government itself should embark on a mission to deport such visiting students that are expressing support for Hamas and other terrorist entities.
So it's worth noting that foreign students in the United States who are studying here still have basic constitutional rights. I mean, you don't have no right to free speech in the United States as a foreign student just because you're here. So just the idea of deporting people on the basis of expressing a political viewpoint or a foreign policy opinion, that in itself is outrageous and legally questionable. Now, again,
yeah.
I want to emphasize Pam Bondi, who is Trump's nominee for Merrick Garland's position, Attorney General, head of the Justice Department, has said that people who are American citizens who express sympathy for Hamas, which is, by the way, the legitimate elected government of Gaza, and is no threat to American citizens other than Jews living in Israel and these kibbutzes, she is on record for saying that American citizens, not just foreign students, should be investigated by the FBI. This is going to be the new head of the Justice Department. So anyway, so there was this task force, and then after that task force, which was created on November 22nd, 2023, a year later, October 7th, 2024, they released this Project Esther, a national strategy to combat anti-Semitism. And this, I think, is the culmination of all the work of this task force.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the policy prescription that is going to be implemented in the new Trump Justice Department now under these neocons. So,
yep.
Emily, you read the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
What were your big takeaways from it?
Well, first of all, the name is a dead giveaway, Project Esther. Of course, that's in reference to the Bible story that is about the Jewish queen that was a secret Jew. It's just about the Jews committing mass murder. I guess 75,000 Persians, modern day, ancient Iranians, were massacred to secure that the Jews could live in the kingdom.
And be in power next to the king.
Right.
You know, I looked over the Book of Esther again before we filmed, and it really... it's something everybody should study. I mean, anywhere you go, if you're in a hotel and there's a Gideon's Bible there, pick it up and read the Book of Esther sometime. The Book of Esther is almost like the blueprint for how Jews operate when they're living among foreign nations.
Yes, weaseling their way in, getting in the ear. Obviously, Trump is like the king in this situation.
Yes.
They're whispering in their ear and getting the king to murder their enemies instead, and then they basically take over the kingdom.
And as far as the 75,000 people, it's worth pointing out the bad guy in the Book of Esther is Haman, the Agagite, who was the advisor to the Persian king.
Yeah.
Esther, his crypto-Jewish wife, the king's crypto-Jewish wife, conspires with Mordecai, who's the leader of the Jews and also her uncle,
mm-hmm.
when Haman is agitating against, basically saying, Your Majesty, these Jews are a problem. Maybe we need to expel them.
Of course, that's not mentioned as to what the Jews were doing that could make Haman want this.
Right. So Haman is the bad guy, and you would think that he would be the one that they want to kill. And when you see people talk about the Book of Esther, very often this 75,000 figure is not mentioned. But it is right there It is in chapter 8 of the book of Esther. And Emily, I wanted to double check this because I think we mentioned it in the show we did on Amalek.
Yes.
But I wanted to check and find the exact, because I thought I remembered this correctly. And I was absolutely right. This is the New King James Version. This is the book of Esther, chapter 8, verse 11. By these letters, the king permitted the Jews who were in every city to gather together and protect their lives, to destroy, kill, and annihilate all the forces of any people or province that would assault them, both little children and women, and to plunder their possessions. And I looked this up again also in the English Standard Version, which I think that's the one that Gideon's put in hotels. It says, the king allowed the Jews who were in every city to gather and defend their lives, to destroy, to kill, and to annihilate any armed force of any people or province that might attack them, children and women included, and to plunder their goods. So the book of Esther, which, again, Purim is based on this. This is their big holiday, Purim.
Yeah.
It's just a celebration of a mass slaughter of people, not only people who they say are anti-Jewish, but explicitly the women and little children.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's just a classic Jewish motif is, you know, Moses led to all the newborns being slaughtered. These Jews are always committing mass murder, but it's always... there's always a moral reason for them to do it. It's always necessary, you know,
right.
Child killing. And, you know, this document starts out, if it wasn't clear enough with the name, they actually reference the Bible story and they go over the Bible story, including the quote, so many Hamans and only one Purim. Yeah. We are all Haman. I mean, they've had, you know, Hitler is Haman. Hamas is Haman. Now the American citizens are Haman,
yeah.
AKA the enemy of the Jews that they need to do mass slaughter to. So, you know, if the Jews weren't masked off before, they really are now invoking this like ancient desert Bible story, Jewish hoopla bullshit,
yeah.
Right? So we're starting right off the bat with that. We're on to a great start. What can I say about this? Where do we even begin?
Well, we can start with their key takeaways because I want to break this down. So the key trick that this Project Esther uses is this term Hamas Support Network, HSN, which sounds like a sort of, I was saying to Stryker, it reminds me of the RMVE, racially motivated violent extremist acronym that they used for our people back around the time of Charlottesville and after that. It's a sort of quasi-government designation. It sounds like official anti-terrorism designation, Hamas Support Network, HSN.
So who is that? So basically
anybody
that criticizes Israel on both the left and the right, we're all lumped into this terrorist organization now.
Yes.
So... you know, that's us, obviously. That's anyone who's talking about Jewish power.
It's anyone who's listening to this program and agreeing with it. It's anyone who has the thought that Jews have too much power in the United States, by their definition, could be lumped in to this Hamas support network. So that's the trick that they use.
It's illegal to donate money to a terrorist organization right now, a designated terrorist. You cannot send money to them, right? Now you can't even just... so not even just support Hamas and say outright, oh, I support Hamas and I support Palestine. You can't even be an independent actor now that's like independently criticizing Israel, because even independent actors now are now lumped into an organization.
Right.
So you can even say probably, well, I don't necessarily support Hamas, but I am critical of Israel. They're still going to say that you're part of this.
You're part of this Hamas support network. Yeah. And it's also something that we need to point out again and again and again. Hamas was and is the popular government of Gaza, democratically elected. One of the things they say is that these groups want to destroy democracy.
Yeah.
Hamas was elected in a democracy. The reason they don't want to have democracy in the West Bank, the reason they don't allow democracy in Egypt. Remember when the Arab Spring happened and they had democracy in Egypt and the Egyptian people voted in the Muslim Brotherhood, which Hamas is the Palestinian wing. It started out as the Palestinian wing of the Muslim Brotherhood. And what happened? Mubarak's military junta took control and executed the elected leader of the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. So they say that these groups are anti-democracy.
And that's a theme now.
Oh, yeah.
That's a theme because now when I read that, my first thought is, okay, yeah, the anti-woke stuff, how we keep talking about the flippening, they're now throwing us a bone. They're saying, well, the Biden administration was not good at combating anti-Semitism, even though they funded the whole war and sent over how many millions of dollars to, you know, kill Palestinians. They didn't do enough. In this document, it's specifically saying the Biden administration, you know, was focusing on other minorities and LGBTQ people and helping the rights of those people instead of the Jews, instead of combating anti-Semitism as much as they should be. So I think that was the moment that they picked Trump to be the guy now. Because yeah. if the Biden administration was, oh, you know, maybe trying to help black people a little too much, that's why they're throwing the LGBTQ people and black people under the bus now. I mean, they're done. Like, the BLM thing is over. The trans stuff is over. Literally, Mark Zuckerberg, just on Meta, he's allowing people to critique the LGBTQ community more on Facebook.
Well, he just went on Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you mentioned Mark Zuckerberg, because he is the really the perfect example of this. He went on Joe Rogan and he actually said that we need to, Trump needs to protect America's, the strategic power of America's companies. He used the word strategic.
Yeah.
Now, when he gave this little talk, he was wearing like his black like sweater with his like Uyghur chain.
Yeah, he became a Uyghur.
And you know, his watch, people identified his watch, the watch that he's wearing. He's talking about just regular Americans. His watch is worth over $900,000.
No.
So he's wearing a $900,000 watch. And he went on Joe Rogan, Mr. Everyman, who himself is worth $200 million, you know, last time I checked.
Yeah.
And was saying how we need to have a new, the old elite needs to be replaced in America. And,
oh my
and
God.
Again, it's part of this whole thing of these billionaires masquerading as populists. But
yes.
Zuckerberg, though, the interesting thing, there were articles showing, and we'll put the headline up, about how Zuckerberg's big change on free speech policy on Facebook is carving out an exception, of course, for anti-Semitism
of
and
course.
Anti-Israel stuff. So
yeah.
you can go on there and criticize trans people and blacks and everybody else.
Yeah.
And this is all part of their thing.
Yeah, well, that's what happened on X.
Yeah.
And the only reason the Jew critique was able to happen on X was because it was literally impossible to contain after October
yes.
7th. But yeah, no. Did you hear Zuckerberg is now removing the tampon dispensers from men's restrooms? Oh boy, we're so back, baby.
Yeah.
We're back to what, 2021? Like, wokeness is over now. The tampons are gone.
Right.
Based. I mean, this guy's still a
so
Jew.
So transparent.
I mean, come
it's
on.
So transparent. And Joe Rogan is such the mouthpiece of this new thing that's in. This dumb right-wing billionaire faux populism, Jewish faux populism. It's so obvious. It's so naked.
So obvious. And, you know, this whole, what we talked about last episode, the woke right, this term that was came up. Now they're trying to label white identity politics or what they used to call Nazism as woke in this great
right.
flippening.
Hitler's
and
woke.
Right. And they're trying to equate National Socialism to communism. And in this document, right off the bat, they say, both communism, and which is the origin of the DEI stuff, and Adolf Hitler's Nazism are a threat to, you know, the Jewish people and stuff. And yeah, so they're right off the bat, they're saying DEI bad. Right. We're going to roll back DEI because DEI paints things in terms of oppressor versus oppressed.
Yes.
And the Jews are now being painted as the oppressors. Which is so funny because Jews are the eternal victims and, of course, have used this oppressor-oppressed ideology to get into power and extort money from people and, you know, the Holocaust, obviously, forever. Now they're saying they never did any of that, that DEI actually was working against them.
Right.
Because now they're being framed as the oppressors. So, yes, this whole thing is in the frame of anti-woke. The Biden administration wasn't doing enough for the Jewish community. It
That's right.
fully outlines how they're making the switch to the right. This is why Trump was pushed and allowed to win in a landslide. They're jumping ship. All the stuff we were talking about is being confirmed in this document.
Yes. Absolutely.
And it's all to benefit Israel and the Jews.
they define the Hamas support network, so the HSN, which we see throughout the document, we define the Hamas support network inside America as the people and organizations that are both directly and indirectly involved in furthering Hamas's cause in contravention of American values and to the detriment of American citizens and America's national security interests. So,
indirectly.
Well, people and organizations. Now, again, because Hamas is designated a terrorist organization by the Jewish State Department, which in itself is a major, major, major subversion of the United States, of the sovereignty of the United States, that Jews inside America, just like in the Book of Esther, just like with the Persians, they can use the American government to designate their enemies, not our enemies,
their enemies, the
national enemies of Israel, not of the United States, to designate them as terrorist organizations, even when they are elected governments through democracy that provide social services and everything else, or are allowed resistance, which is allowed, by the way, under a military occupation, under international law, resistance is allowed again.
And just to remind everyone that Israel is a terrorist state. Israel
it's a rogue
was founded
state.
On terrorism.
Founded on terrorism.
They like coined the, you know, the original, like, just going into a mosque or church and setting off a bomb and killing a bunch of innocent people. I mean, the
mass bombings, mass shootings,
the beepers. I mean, the stuff that just happened. The most grotesque forms of, you know, like blanket terrorism, like outright terrorism.
We went after Saddam Hussein for weapons. They have illegal nuclear weapons. So Israel is a total rogue state, terrorist state. But again, the subversion of the State Department that we have Jews like Blinken and these others who are able to designate something like the Nordic Resistance Movement, a terrorist organization, and then penalize us, American citizens, if we send a dollar and in any way support these organizations.
Or even like have them on a show or anything.
Every single bit of humanitarian aid that goes to the children of Gaza has to, by definition, go through Hamas. So this is how they're able to do a blockade on medical supplies and food.
Yes.
Because if you are sending medical supplies, aid, support, food to the people, the children, the wounded of Gaza, the population of Gaza, by definition, it has to go through the Hamas government, and therefore now you have done terrorism. So that in itself is a major subversion, and we can't let that go. But with that said, they say furthering Hamas's cause, so not giving material aid to Hamas, which is illegal because of their subversion.
Yeah.
But they're talking about furthering Hamas's cause, which includes us filming this show. They say in contravention of American values, again, not in contravention of U.S. law. So what they are talking about here specifically is First Amendment protected activity that does not violate U.S. law.
Right.
That's very important.
If this isn't ringing alarm bells now for anyone who cares about free speech, and then like indirectly. So, yeah, anyone just making a show or like, you know, holding like an anti-Israel protest are aiding Hamas now. So everyone is lumped together in an organization, and any act that's critical of Israel is considered now an act of terrorism, essentially.
Well, they're trying to put it that way. And now when there's this section framing the problem where they say the HSN's success would lead to one or more of the following results. Now, again, This has to do with the fundamental sovereignty of the United States and the people of the United States. They say legitimization of the protests in an effort to make their anti-Semitism and calls for genocide acceptable. Again, classic crying out in pain as they strike. They are committing a genocide. They're committing a genocide.
These protests are protesting genocide.
Protesting
genocide. Literally
anti-genocide
protests.
But the key word there is legitimization. Right. So
if you're framing it as a genocide, then you are committing terrorism. This is what this document is saying.
So that's one of the things. Now, again, protests are, by definition, legitimate. If you have the right to do it, there's a group of people, American citizens, come together, or foreign students for that matter, and they come together to protest a genocide in another country. That's legitimate by your standard, it may not be legitimate in the eyes of your enemies. But that's the thing, is this is, they don't want to have counter protests. They want to shut down any protest at all. Now they say,
yeah, so I guess when they, the counter protests, aka IDF's, ex-IDF soldiers and like Mossad coming in and like lobbing bombs and like breaking the skulls
pipes, yeah,
of people that happened in May and April of last year, they don't even want to do that anymore.
No, they don't even want to get it to that point.
Yeah,
they want these protests, right. And they've already succeeded in squelching the protests. But another thing was the erosion of resources and diplomatic support from the United States to Israel in its war against Hamas and decreased assistance generally, deterioration in Israel's relations with and eventually a complete break with its most strategic ally, the United States, and passive or overt unilateral U.S. recognition of a Palestinian entity to include Hamas. And my point with all this is, these are decisions that should be made by the people of the United States based on their interests, not based on the interests of Jews or of Israel. And Jews who push for these things in the United States are in fact the ones acting as part of a Zionist support network, which is the subversive network in the United States. So
yes,
everything
again,
they're accusing us of, they are doing.
Yes, completely inverted, as usual. And they're trying to frame this now as, you know, in my Christmas special, I had a line that's like, we're about to find out that maybe America first means Israel first after all. Well, that's literally what they're saying in this document. They're saying that anything that does not support Israel is inherently anti-American.
Yes.
And now Zionism is intrinsic.
Yes.
With Americanism.
There's a line in here, it's talk warning about the extent of foreign influence over the hearts and minds of America,
I know.
American youth. I mean,
so again, like, Israel's not considered foreign anymore. It's just intrinsically American now.
Yes.
We might as well just make it another state.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
Because then the illegals could go there.
Right.
They could
right.
just be dumped there if it was a state.
Now, it says that their vision, their intent by the completion of Project Esther, and by the way, they intend to all implement all of this in the first few months of the incoming Trump administration.
Yeah, well, we can play that clip about Trump where he's like, anti-Semitism is going to be stopped at noon on January 20th, 2025.
I'm here today to tell the Jewish American community that this ugly tide of anti-Semitic pro-Hamas bigotry and hate will be turned back and crushed starting at noon on January 20th, 2025.
But yeah, he's talking about this. He's talking about Project Esther. He's going to go hard. And of course, he said over and over again, if those hostages aren't released by the time I'm in office, all hell is going to break loose.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Now, they say by completion of Project Esther, we intend that the HSN and its composite HSOs, organizations, will cease to exist as a functional, effective support apparatus for Hamas inside the United States. They will not be able to generate any political pressure on the U.S. government or the U.S.-Israel relationship. Now, what that means is that they want Israel to have their stranglehold completely over Americans and over the United States, and for there to be no pushback from anyone within the United States. I mean, this is just the way they're portraying this. It's that broad of a brush that they're painting it with.
Yeah. Now, so it's like even like watching a show, even just like watching the show or any, you know, anti-Semitic content, you are now part of this HSO.
Right. Well, HSN.
HSN.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, they have a list of desired end states, okay? And this is all very, you know, everything is bullet pointed out. You look at this. One of their things is HSO propaganda eradicated from the U.S. education system at all levels. Unable to disseminate propaganda inside the United States. No longer have access to U.S. open society, meaning free speech and all that. Loses access to Congress. Now, this is an interesting one. Communications disrupted.
Yeah.
Rendered unable to conduct or sustain demonstrations and protests.
No longer have access to the U.S. economy. Okay, this is ES4. HSOs no longer have access to the U.S. economy, aka you can't make money at all. If you're criticizing the Jews, you're not allowed to make money. at all.
Yeah.
Not allowed to live.
And the American public broadly united against them and critical vulnerabilities exploited. Now, again, this roadmap that they're laying out here is the exact Jewish roadmap that was used against the alt-right and is still used against pro-white forces in the United States. Many of these actions and this type of thinking here that was developed during that period, Unite the Right, then January 6th, but particularly our guys.
Yeah. That's why I was saying, like, weren't they already doing this for years?
Well, that's the thing. This is all... It's all swept in under this anti-left-wing groups, Hamas and everything. This will be used against right-wing groups. All of it will.
Oh, yeah.
So their list of desired effects, a couple of things is HSO supporting faculty and or staff removed or fired. So they're just talking about anybody, any college professor.
Yeah.
Sympathetic to the plight of the Palestinians. Getting them fired.
Yeah.
Access to campuses lost and or denied. Again, you know, when I went to school at WVU, there was a free speech zone where, which itself was a really factor of the Homeland Security Bush War on Terror era, because really everywhere in America is a free speech zone. Every public space in America is a free speech zone. But back then, after the WTO protests in the 90s, they came up with this thing where they can cordon off protesters into this, like, this is a free speech zone, designated area. Which itself, like I said, is constitutionally questionable at best.
Right.
But they're saying you can't even have that. You can't even – on no college campus will there be any kind of pro-Palestinian protests.
HSOs will be unable to raise revenue.
Cannot or unwilling to communicate with each other, unable to coordinate action. Permits to protest or demonstrate are restricted or denied.
Oh, what does that ring a bell?
And this is all of the,
Charlottesville.
Right. This is our thing. Unwilling to join demonstrations, in other words, pressure on them. And this is something that, like I said, this was all used against us and is continually used against us. It was used against the NJP. Now, one of the things was expose critical resources. Again, this whole blueprint. Two things about it. The first thing is it shows you exactly how they think and how they operate against us, against pro-white people in the United States, all right? But the second thing is you could just hold up a mirror of this, Emily, and show exactly the types of things that we need to be thinking about against Jews and Jewish power in the United States, because everything that they talk about here in terms of these networks and how they're financed and how they're supported is, if it's not true of Hamas, it is certainly true of Israel and Likud and Jewish power.
Oh, yeah.
So
all that they're talking about, like, oh, we have to expose the center of power that is used to, you know, like the center vacuum. I think they use the center of gravity term, the epicenter that like, you know, distributes money and resources and makes people act. And it's like, this just sounds like what you guys are doing. Like, people in the United States, most pro-Palestinian supporters are not, like, funded by anyone. They're not, like, they're not receiving money from anyone. They're not receiving talking points or being told what to do. I mean, that's only you guys. Because you, like, trying to get your influence out amongst people using these tactics because, you know, you're so unlikable and nobody wants to support you organically. So you have to, you know, spend, like, billions of dollars to influence people's minds. These are people that are coming to these conclusions on their own from just looking at reality, you know.
Looking at pictures of little babies with their brains blown out all over Twitter and all over social media.
So now is like, you know, looking at a picture of a, you know, a baby murdered by Israel. That is now considered a terrorist act.
Yeah.
Or viewing supporting
terrorism. Yes. You're part of a support network for Hamas. Yes. And that's this is the two things that jumped out at me the most of this whole document. The one was this section, because this is all, and Stryker and I discussed this, this is all coming straight out of the post-Charlottesville playbook that think tanks like the Rand Corporation put together, when they were targeting so-called racially motivated violent extremists. So yeah. This is the way they mapped out our networks and identified these nodes and how they sought to disrupt them. The optics war, I think, was a product of this. I think a lot of the infighting that destroyed so many of these organizations and continues to plague us.
And you're seeing it on Twitter, where like people that are like the big anti-Semitic voices are smeared and there's lots of attacks against them. I mean, it's obvious, these coordinated smear tactics that they're doing. I mean, they're dumping all this money into it. And we're seeing it on Twitter.
They have it down to a science. I mean, again, when you're talking about, I mean, Department of Homeland Security put a lot of these plans together with these big old think tanks like the RAND Corporation. But I mean, the Heritage Foundation, when they have $100 million revenue, you know, they can really, really, really get this down to a science. How to destroy democracy, how to stop people's spontaneous aversion to these horrible genocidal policies, to the fact that we don't have sovereignty over our country, the naked capture of our republic by Jewish billionaires.
Yeah. And of course, in this document, they're framing it as we're trying to preserve democracy and we're trying to eradicate people that want to destroy democracy. Yeah, it's very,
very thin. Veneer that they put on that, though, it's so obvious. It's just like the Book of Esther itself.
Well,
and you just have to read it with a critical eye to see exactly, they're telling you exactly what they are and what they're doing.
I know, and they're sloppy. They're getting sloppy, man.
But they say that, as with any social network, and again, this is the racially motivated violent extremist, this is the alt-right playbook. Project Esther's operations will target critical HSN and HSO vulnerabilities, including critical nodes, critical functions, and or critical requirements to optimize effects and encourage the rapid dismantling of the HSN. This is where they have this section that really jumped out at me. A crash course in center of gravity and network analysis.
Right. So finding the anti-Semitic epicenters. All right, a crash course in center of gravity and network analysis. Center of gravity analysis. The center of gravity is the source of power that provides moral or physical strength, freedom of action, or the will to act. Critical capability, a means that is considered a crucial enabler for a center of gravity to function as such and is essential to the accomplishment of the specified assumed objectives, what the center of gravity does for the adversary. Critical requirement, an essential condition, resource, and means for a critical capability to be fully operational, what the center of gravity needs to perform its critical capabilities.
So that right there shows you why they focus on debanking. I mean, this right here is why you were kicked off Patreon back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is this again, they improvised it in a sort of ad hoc way during the period of the alt-right, 2016, 2017, and then they studied it. And they mapped it all out, and they figured it out, and they got it down to a science. And this is why certain accounts are banned and kicked off. This is why other accounts are – their reach is limited.
Yeah. I have to say, I think this is probably why the Project Groip account was – or the collective was taken off of Twitter.
Of course.
Yes.
Of course. Without question.
Yeah. I mean, all the top Groipers were removed, repeatedly suspended. Most people, if you get suspended, you can just make a new account and they're just going to let you go. No, the Groipers were suspended over and over and over again. Anyone affiliated with the Project Groip account. And that's because the Groipers were becoming too much of like an organization.
And they went through all this with the NJP.
Yeah.
With brutal effect during the whole period of all our protests and activity. And it was enforced so rigorously that it was basically like we didn't even exist on any of these social networks. And again, this is all stuff that they have down. You see all these little CR, CV, CC. They got it down to a science. They just plug us in, or the pro-Palestinians or whoever it is, when we try to do something against them. They just plug in these things and then they go to work using their media power, legal power. We'll get into all the
And then when they suspend you, then they smear you and say, oh, it was because of this reason. And then they invent reasons why you were suspended other than the fact that you were just criticizing Jews.
So critical vulnerability, an aspect of a critical requirement that is deficient or vulnerable to direct or indirect attack that will create decisive or significant effects. So they identify the weak point, basically, and they go after it. Social network analysis. Social network is the organization of a group of people based on their relationships. Critical node. See, this node stuff is the key. So the critical node in social network analysis, a network member with a significant number of connections to other network members, and the removal of which will have a deleterious effect on the network. Now, this they were doing very strongly with the alt-right and the way they mapped it out. But this is why also with the stuff with Palantir, which we're going to cover in a future episode, why it's so important for them to have everyone on Twitter and have everyone on Facebook so they can map these out. Because once people go to Telegram and Gab, it's impossible for them, or it's more difficult, shall we say, for them to map all this out. So that's a big part of what we're seeing with Zuck and with Elon is getting everybody back on where they can study and map these relationships out.
And we talked about that on our show, The State of the Online Right. There was literally documents that were talking about this, why people were allowed back on X. This is a real thing. So they can have you there, they can know who you are, and then they can delete you.
Yes. And then the last one here was critical function. Often overlooked in social network analysis, a critical function refers to the nature of the connections themselves between nodes in a network. Nodes often connect in multiple ways. The more the different types of connections, the stronger the overall bond between nodes, and the stronger and more resilient the network. However, functions are also targetable. Think of it in terms of something basic, like communications. If multiple nodes all rely on internet connectivity to communicate and something disrupts internet connectivity, then the network becomes less effective because nodes cannot communicate with each other. So this is also something with why we saw the FBI targeting particularly our donors.
Oh, yeah.
And certain crucial people, you know, people who were business partners of other people involved in the NJP.
Yeah.
They map this out and they go after it. What you won't see in any of this stuff is any kind of, we need to persuade people why beheading 40 babies is bad. We need to persuade people about, you know, the poor Jews that died at Auschwitz.
Oh, yeah. We need to put out our own propaganda. We need to make more of our good propaganda. No, they just want to squash it all outright.
But they're not talking about educating or using speech to communicate, like, here's how we have to frame our message to persuade people that Hamas are actually the bad guys. It's just, this is how we use tech and control over the banks and control over big federal law enforcement and the Justice Department and legal resources to just target, isolate, and destroy the organic networks of people that are coming up to oppose a genocide that Israel is committing with American tax dollars.
Right, and it is largely organic, but they're making it out that it is a connected organization. They're making it out like there's a conspiracy here. Now, one was a really creepy sentence when it says, exploit fissures within and among anti-Semites and affiliated organizations and their target audience.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. You didn't say you didn't say Merry Christmas. You said Got Yule. You're a pagan.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm a Christian.
Yes.
And you can't be. I mean,
so we've seen this again and again and again and again.
Every time you see this.
Oh, we're gonna pull something up that they did like 7 years ago. They said
Emily,
this.
I hate to say it, but the Wife Jack meme was 100% that little kerfuffle that the Wife Jack meme thing. Without a doubt, I would bet my life on it that I would bet my life to a nickel that there were Jews and these people in these types of organizations that were like, here's a critical node. Here's a network. Here's a thing. Here is a fissure now
we're going to send Wife Jack in to explode the node.
Yes, and we'll have a couple things here, and this will create fissures. And
it worked.
And it did it right as the Syria thing was going down.
Yeah.
Right when there was this critical thing where everybody should have been getting behind the massive global gayop that Zog was deploying. They deployed this stupid meme argument.
I saw people in real time fall apart and lose their connections and have falling outs because of this stupid freaking meme.
Exploiting
I saw it happen.
Fissures within and among anti-Semites.
Yeah.
So saying they look at it and they say, here's a group of anti-Semites that are married with children. Here's a group of anti-Semites who are all single. let's start a thing here where we create like these and oh our people fall for it every single time.
They really fall for it every single time.
And the left falls for it too, because that's the thing. This is used just as much on the left.
Yeah, it says that the anti-Semites must be made to feel extreme discomfort. So basically just totally smear people's names. I mean, I'm not going to, like, listen, I've been enjoying a nice renaissance on Twitter here. Everyone's been so nice to me and everything. I'm on an anonymous Wojak, but it's like, it's only going to be a matter of time before there's going to be some smear campaign against me. I mean,
they're going to come after Odyssey. They're going to come after everything. I mean, this is what we're going to have under the Trump administration. You'll be able to say that the vaccines cause death, and that if you take a COVID vaccine, you'll die. You'll be able to say that again on Facebook. And this is what Zuckerberg went on and on and on about with Joe
COVID's
Rogan.
Back.
The Biden administration pressured, strong-armed poor Mark Zuckerberg to censor COVID skeptics.
That's all we need to be talking about right now.
You'll be able to be a COVID skeptic. Yeah, you'll be able to be a COVID skeptic.
Let's start talking about that again.
And oh my God. This line, let me read that again. They say HSN supporters and influence targets. Influence targets? Does that mean, again, the people who follow you on Twitter, who are or may follow you on Twitter, the people who may listen to this show, influence targets, must be made to feel extreme discomfort. We will generate that discomfort. We will construct situations so stark that HSN supporters and enablers either will be compelled to change course and capitulate to our pressure campaign, or will ultimately fail and render themselves irrelevant by continuing to support organizations that support terrorism.
I can't tell you how I have seen this play out on Twitter with this kosher right that's attempting to wedge itself in the far right. Oh, you're a black pillar. Oh, you're a wet blanket black pillar. You don't want
to
win.
They go to personal attacks and they go to personal gossip immediately. Again, the idea is not to persuade. There is no persuasion. Reason doesn't factor into this. The method used is compulsion, to use force, use pressure.
Yeah. And what's crazy is that they have been doing this entire time, literally. We've seen it happen again and again, organization upon organization. But now they're just laying it out here in just like direct terms. So it's like, what I'm wondering is how is this going to be any different than what they've been doing for the last like 5 or 6 years?
It's just going to be that on steroids. Now they mention specifically what they're going to use in terms of authorities. And they talk specifically about the Foreign Agents Registration Act and the Racketeer Influence and Corruption, Corrupt Organizations Act, the RICO Act, along with counterterrorism, hate speech, and immigration laws. Now, RICO itself, which was an anti-mafia, old anti-mafia thing, that was used, you know, against the Brüder Schweigen, the order, which was very questionable use of the RICO Act. The RICO Act is something that already is very legally questionable. It's still on the books, but the way it's been used and interpreted is basically to net these like conspiracies, you know, and get people who are not involved to lump them in with something that is actually criminal. The Foreign Agents Registration Act, I mean, that ought to be the thing right there, the law that's used to put Jonathan Greenblatt in prison and all these people, every single one of these Jewish Zionists.
Dual citizens infiltrating and occupying our government to destroy our country.
So again, because Jews control the government because we have a Zionist-occupied government, through their big money power, ability to control elections, and then ability to appoint judges and all this kind of thing, and then, you know, control things like the State Department, they are able to determine who is a foreign agent not registering and who isn't. And they are able to interpret these laws in their favor. It's so evil and malicious. Yeah. But all these other things that the Jews have for decades been putting into place, counterterrorism stuff, homeland security, all unconstitutional, hate speech laws. So here you have the Heritage Foundation, big Reaganite conservative thing, right? Talking about invoking hate speech laws, which are the ultimate in woke. The ultimate in woke. You don't get any more woke than hate speech law.
Well, that's the thing, is that these words don't mean anything. They're flipping it all around. All it means now, all woke means, is anyone who opposes the Jews at this point.
And then they talk under activities about, to exploit specific vulnerabilities, we must conduct legal,
Oh, yes.
Private research and investigation to uncover criminal wrongdoings.
So what does that mean?
Conduct audits, academic and financial. We must conduct information campaigns designed to illuminate and expose name and shame. I mean, again, that's woke, right?
Yes, name and shame, but that's like, yeah, smear tactics, canary mission.
To undermine their credibility, they actually say the line, we must wage lawfare, which is a political malicious misuse of the law. Disrupt HSN and HSO communications, both to the broader public and among each other. Public relation campaigns make people who are fence sitters or supporters make their position untenable.
Yeah. So basically what I heard this described as is it's because they have been doing all this stuff for years. And what this now is like taking it from like the private sector to like the public sector or getting the government directly involved.
Well, a lot of this is COINTELPRO tactics. And as I've pointed out many times, COINTELPRO tactics that were used by the FBI were really in many ways modeled off of the union busting techniques of the late 19th century and the early 20th century. I mean, this is a feature of a system that calls itself a democracy, but is in fact a corrupt plutocracy, is that the problem, if you call yourself a democracy, you get certain legitimacy from that. You can say, well, you know, we're legitimate because the people is what the people want.
Yeah.
The problem with that is the people actually want some things that the people that are actually in control, they don't want it.
Right.
So how you handle that is the same way that the union busters handled it, the big corporations and the original robber barons did 150 years ago. You use agents provocateurs, you use spies, you use all the things, you violence and intimidation.
Yep.
You use lawfare because the robber barons were all in on that back then.
Yeah.
So that's how you use – you still call it a democracy, but you use all these pressure techniques, including just illegal, including murder, to
– to stay in power. I mean, like democracy – I always say liberal democracy is the most violent – political ideology on planet Earth, historically and currently, is the most, like, the people that uses the most violence to keep itself in power all across the world. But, you know, of course, Project Esther says we are going to make sure that we do all this legally. We are not going to violate the rights of U.S. citizens.
They don't go to great lengths to say that. They just like throw in a line here or there.
I mean, they mention it. They're like, listen, this could backfire and we could be held to liability. So we have to make sure this doesn't violate any rights. Well, again, they're going to redefine what the rights that we have are, you know, like if you're a terrorist, then you don't have these rights.
Here's
right?
the thing, though. The real mask off moment. There's the other section. I said there were two sections that really jumped out at me from this. The one was the thing about nodes and all that, because they're telling you how they do it, how they mm-hmm. how they got it down. The second one, though, is there's a italicized section that specifically talks about the German-American Bund. And I want to read this in full because this tells you everything you need to know. In the same way that Esther itself is a Jew genocide story where they again explicitly say they're killing little kids and women.
In the Bible.
In the Bible.
Yeah.
In the Torah, in the Old Testament. And in the same way that they are exposing with their language here that they're not talking about using persuasion, reason, making a moral case for something, but solely relying on pressure tactics, lawfare and that sort of thing, debanking, censorship, and invoking maliciously these horrible anti-white civil rights laws, Title VI, hate speech, etc. This is where they really go full mask off. So they say America has been here before. Between World War I and World War II, the United States witnessed the rise of a highly organized nationwide group of American Nazis known as the German-American Bund. After undergoing numerous earlier iterations, the group finally coalesced around its highly charismatic American Bundesfuhrer, Fritz Kuhn, and worked to inculcate Nazism within America's large German-American communities. Now, right there, I want to just say the German-American Bund, we could do a whole show on it, but mm-hmm. I'm going to try to keep this quick, were extremely pro-American, emphasized how pro-American they were and how they wanted to be good Americans. It's in their platform that they had. They were a patriotic organization of German Americans, which were, I think, the largest non-English speaking minority group in America.
Yeah, yeah. Well, see, they were patriotic because they wanted to. They were going against the Jews, so it was true right. patriotism.
Right, right. And you, yeah. and that's why at their Madison Square Garden rally, they have a huge, giant picture, not of Adolf Hitler, but of George Washington. And that was the point Fritz Kuhn made over and over again, was about true Americanism. But anyway, that's the first point here, is that the German Americans are the backbone, one of the big backbones of the United States, and have been since the beginning, have been since long before even Baron von Steuben trained the American militia how to fight. German Americans have, as much bad as Jews have done for the United States, German Americans have done that much good.
Mm-hmm.
The Bund was an organization of German Americans. It was not a Nazi fifth column, although they tried to make it like it was some sort of secret fifth column to try to take over the United States. Now, they say the Bund generated income, held large rallies replete with Nazi-style uniforms and swastikas, ran family and youth camps, and coordinated actions to implement a near-mirror image version of Hitler's Nazi Germany here in the United States. All totally legal, all totally constitutionally protected.
Oh, how dare they? You know, how dare they?
Though the Bund cloaked itself in what it portrayed as American values inseparable from Nazi philosophy, key Americans, including Jews, saw the Bund for what it was, an anti-Semitic de facto extension of the German Nazi machine propagating across the United States. American civil society responded in kind, recognizing the threat to America and mobilizing a whole-of-community effort to counter the Bund. Now, check this out.
Mm-hmm.
In this section, they show all the parts that were put into play against the Bund. And if you break these parts down, you see all the parts of how Zog stays in power in the United States.
Yep.
The first is the media. They say famed journalist Walter Winchell, himself a Jew, relentlessly exposed and attacked Kuhn and the Bund from his New York City-based media perch, and Jewish Hollywood media moguls organized protests and generated anti-Bund content. So Walter Winchell, Emily, do you know who he is?
No.
He is the guy, the infamous, extremely infamous gossip columnist that J.J. Hunsucker was based on in the movie Sweet Smell of Success.
J.J. Hunsucker.
Walter Winchell was a horribly corrupt, evil gossip columnist who created basically single-handedly had the power to make or break careers all across America. His Wikipedia column actually says how under his personal ethics, Winchell became known for his attempts to destroy the careers of his political and personal enemies as his own career progressed, especially after World War II. Favorite tactics were allegations of having ties to communist organizations and accusations of sexual impropriety, not above name-calling. For most of his career, his contracts with the newspaper and radio employers required them to hold him harmless from any damages resulting from lawsuits to slander or libel. He said, I know, I'm a son of a bitch. I mean, he basically had the power to make or break careers, just like J.J. Hunsucker in Sweet Smell of Success.
Yes.
And he was known for, he was one of the first commentators in America to attack Adolf Hitler and organizations such as the German-American Bund. So Walter Winchell is one of the earliest examples of extremely powerful Jewish media influence.
Smear campaigns.
Doing horrible smear campaigns against ordinary American citizens and making or breaking politics and political careers and others within America. Now, as far as Hollywood goes, when they talk about the media moguls, Hollywood put out the film Confessions of a Nazi Spy. This was put out by Warner Brothers, Jack Warner, big Jew.
Mm-hmm.
And it was done in the 30s before World War II even started. So it's before the war started, let alone before 1941, when we actually went to war with Nazi Germany. And what it was an attempt to paint the German-American Bund as a dangerous fifth column in the United States. I will play the trailer from this film now to give our audience an idea of what hysterical fear-mongering this was, and just directly trying to inspire a sort of almost lynch mob hysteria against German Americans living in the United States.
Nazi spy. I am one of thousands stationed in every part of the United States to steal the secrets of your national defense. There are spies stationed in all of the Navy yards in Brooklyn, Philadelphia, Newport News. There are Nazi agents in the aeroplane and munition factories at Bristol, Buffalo, Seattle, Boston. The chief United States inspector in one of your factories turning out secret aeroplane parts is a German spy.
A trial in the United States federal court first brought to the attention of a startled nation this amazing danger to its safety and freedom. Now, from the actual revelations of Department of Justice investigator Leon G. Turow, comes the mightiest dramatic blast ever filmed. The almost incredible story of foreign agents stealing our vital defense plans, of a brown network spreading hatred and terrorism to mask the treacherous plots of its leaders. Confessions of a Nazi spy.
Your plant is turning out a new type supercharger for pursuit ships. How soon can we get the blueprint?
I don't know. I want to quit. I want to wash my hands of all this.
Herr Westphal, have you ever heard of an organization known as the Gestapo?
Gestapo?
We can use some American passports.
Passports?
Yes, we need them for our agents going to South America.
I want you to get me the secret code used between military planes and land bases.
You'd think from the number of spies they've been sending over here that we're at war with Germany. It looks more as if Germany were at war with us. Nazi boons meeting all over the nation, openly training men for street fights, teaching them how to use guns and bayonets. It's a new kind of war, but it's still war. You saw Schlager in the Café Nuremberg?
Yes.
You spoke to him?
Yes.
Did he pay you there?
No.
I want the whole truth, no hedging about.
It is no use, Doctor. They have the codes, the letters, everything about you, too.
Tell the truth. It was only propaganda material I gave Schlager.
You gave Schlager military information.
How do you dare?
We have instructions for you, Fritzweig. You are going back to Germany.
Why?
Your actions have become much too dangerous for you to remain here.
We are still in America. I didn't mean anything wrong. Please, I don't want to go back to Germany. I don't want to go back to Germany. I don't want to go back to Germany.
Wow.
Yeah. So that right there, between Winchell and Warner Brothers and the anti-Nazi films, I mean, this is the worst stuff that Jewish media did.
Well, it's still, you can still feel the waves of it to this day.
To this day, yes. So then they talk about great American politicians initiated efforts to stymie the Bund at all levels, from New York City's half-Jewish, half-Catholic mayor LaGuardia to prosecutor and future New York Governor Thomas Dewey, New York Democratic Congressman Samuel Dickstein, Lithuanian-born Jew worked with Texas Congressman Martin Dees to establish the House of Representatives Special Committee on Un-American Activities, also known as the Dees Committee, charged with uncovering Nazi and communist activities inside the United States. So we've talked about him many, many times on this show, but the fact that they include the Heritage Foundation, big Reaganite conservatives, include Samuel Dickstein, who was outed as a spy for the NKVD, the top guy on the House Un-American Activities Committee with the witch hunt against the German-American Bund, calling them traitors and saying they're a threat to the United States and they're secretly working for the Nazis, was himself working for Stalin's secret police and was getting paid massive amounts of money.
Well, that just shows what their definition of patriotism means. That
exactly.
is more patriotic than German Americans just simply, you know, having a fraternal organization in the United States.
So here we have corrupt media gossip columnists and moguls like Warner Brothers, Walter Winchell. And now they're invoking the precedent of this spy and traitor to the United States, Samuel Dickstein, the Heritage Foundation, just unashamedly, in the same way that they're mentioning the Esther genocide.
Yeah.
Then they go even further. They say law enforcement and the underworld worked in parallel to target the Bund, while J. Edgar Hoover's Federal Bureau of Investigation worked to investigate Bund criminal activity. Jewish gangsters like Meyer Lansky, Benjamin Bugsy Siegel, Abner Longy Swillman, and Mayor Mickey Cohen, sometimes at the behest of their rabbis, happily coordinated, quote, less than kosher activities pro bono to disrupt and thwart the Bund.
Wow, so they're just like celebrating the Jewish mob committing violence against Americans. That's patriotic. See, I know they slipped that in there because they're trying to prime people for just, you know, unofficial, like, violence.
This is what Antifa is. This is yeah, what Antifa that's was what, yeah. against us. And you notice now suddenly Antifa's gone. Now
yeah.
that there's actually a genocide, now that there's actually little children, non-white little kids being killed by the thousands by the American government, Antifa are gone.
They're gone.
They're being shut down.
Where'd
they're
they
being
go?
Defunded.
Yeah.
But this
but, yeah,
was...
it's like, oh, well, you know, they the Jewish mob just came to my house and, like, you know, beat the shit out of me and terrorized my family and, like, destroyed my house. That's not legal, but it's okay because that was a successful tactic in taking down the German-American Bund.
They were murdered. Meyer Lansky was the head of the organization called Murder Incorporated.
No, Murder Inc. That was
Murder Inc. was Meyer Lansky and Bugsy
Siegel. That was like a rap record label in the mid-2000s.
Well, it was an actual organization. Organized crime group active from 1929 to 1941 that acted as the enforcement arm of the National Crime Syndicate, which included that organization was Lucky Luciano and the Italian mob, but also the Jewish mob. Murder Incorporated was composed of Jewish and Italian American gangsters, mainly recruited from poor and working class Jewish and Italian neighborhoods. Murder Incorporated was believed to be responsible between 400 and 1,000 contract killings until the group was exposed in 1941. And
so that's the Jewish mob.
It's the Jewish mob.
So that's who Trump has direct ties to, as Whitney Webb has exposed.
And one of their top killers was this guy, Harry Strauss. Harry Pittsburgh Phil Strauss, American contract killer for Murder Incorporated in the 30s. He reportedly killed over 100 men. Some historians put the number as high as 500, using a variety of methods, including shooting, stabbing, and ice picks, drowning, live burial, buried alive,
what the fuck?
And strangulation. He was born to a Jewish family in the Russian Empire. His parents were Jacob and Yetta Ostrovsky. So
they're celebrating this openly in this document.
Murder Incorporated was the most murderous branch. Obviously, it's in the name of the mob. And, you know, it's worth also pointing out that these guys all got basically forgiven their crimes for working directly with the FBI and working with the federal government, for instance, against the fascist government of Italy. The Italian mob was let off the hook
for their
crimes because they cooperated with the Roosevelt administration to plan the invasion of Sicily.
Yeah.
The same thing is true of Meyer Lansky. I mean,
with gangsters. The feds work with gangsters. I mean, we just watched.
The feds are gangsters.
Yeah, the feds are gangsters. We just watched the Whitey Bulger movie. It's the same thing.
They work
hand in hand.
So to bring it back to Project Esther, they're invoking the worst of Jew media. Walter Winchell, they are invoking an actual Soviet NKVD agent who was leading the witch hunt against the German-American Bund on the House Un-American Activities Committee, the traitor Samuel Dickstein, and now they're invoking Meyer Lansky, who founded Murder Incorporated.
Wow, okay, this is a scandal. I mean, this document needs to be named and shamed. This document needs to be all over the place. It needs to be exposed. Uh-oh, but if we talk about it, we're part of the HSN now, right?
And I want to just one last thing on the Bund. This is from this wonderful book. They Too Were Americans, the German-American Bund in Words, Photos, and Artifacts by Scott Freeland. And it says that Long before the entry of the United States into World War II, FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover, acting upon verbal instructions from the president, began compiling secret dossiers containing names and personal information about anyone he considered a threat to the Roosevelt administration, foreigner or citizen. High on his list were leaders of the German-American Bund. Immediately after and even prior to the attack on Pearl Harbor, federal agents began arresting not only Bundists, but numerous American citizens of German descent, eventually taking into custody some 60,000 persons of all ages and sexes. Most of the Bund leaders were passed over in this initial government roundup because New Deal enemies had other plans for them. All across America on the 7th of July, 1942, leaders of the now defunct German-American Bund were arrested. The indictment charged them with conspiring and attempting to conspire to undermine the morale of the United States Armed Forces by giving counsel to diverse persons to evade, resist, and refuse service in the land and naval forces of the United States. From December 1941, these indictments, FBI investigations, surveillance, and home interrogations were virtual daily occurrences in the lives of many German Americans, particularly for anyone associated with the Bund. And
so they're basically, what this is saying, essentially, is that they are saying that they are going to start rounding people up for having anything to do with the so-called HSN. They're going to do that to us. You know, this is what they are priming for.
I got to say, Emily, this playbook with the Bund, it says that thousands of loyal American citizens of German and Italian descent were incarcerated not only for the duration of World War II, but years thereafter. They learned to their sorrow that the same opinions protected under freedom of speech before 7th of December 1941, Pearl Harbor, were now retroactively condemned as sedition. All their efforts to preserve international peace, or at least to keep America out of the European war, had been subverted by Roosevelt's interventionist policy. The German-American Bund collapsed, and with it the lives of its members, their families, and friends. Many families were broken, some incarcerated, others ignored. The thing that is worth noting about the German-American Bund is they were never able to prove that they were some sort of Nazi plot in America. They actually just were Americans of German descent who admired National Socialism, who were engaging in free activity and had a huge popular organization in America.
Yeah. Well, that just shows that it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if there's proof. They are going to now do what they did for the last 5 years. Yes, like on steroids. They're going to be sending feds. They're going to try and round people up. I mean, I don't want to say that this is going to happen for sure, but what else can we conclude from this document?
See, I know the history and they know the history. They know exactly what they did to the German-American Bund. And that's why they are invoking that precedent, just like they know that the Book of Esther talks about killing the little kids and women of the 75,000 Persians. They know. Yep. They understand what they're invoking.
So they're taking the RICO Act. They're making up a fake organization, the Hamas Sympathizer Organization or whatever, the Hamas Sympathizer Network, designating any individual that happens to come to their own organic conclusion that Israel is bad and murdering people and committing a genocide as members of that organization. You don't have to be officially a member. You're in it now. That's you. So now they can use the RICO Act to target
big
individuals.
Media to smear you, lawfare. I mean, they're just saying it. And they're invoking murderous gangsters, contract killers, which, by the way, did actually kill members of the German-American Bund. There were a number of unsolved murders that they know were Meyer Lansky's hitmen. I mean,
think about
when you have J. Edgar Hoover's FBI protecting the mafia in the same way they did in Boston with Whitey Bulger, only on a grand national strategic scale, to use Zuckerberg's word. They're protecting the Jewish mafia.
This government is the Jewish mafia.
It is the Jewish mafia.
We can call it the Jewish mafia. And look, I've only seen a handful of right-wing people. I don't know about the left, but just a small amount of people talking about this document. People need to be talking about this right now. This needs to be trending on Twitter.
The last part of the document that's really kind of funny is where they say what the risk is of this strategy. And they admit that the risk is that it succeeds. They say that it's worth acknowledging that when Project Esther succeeds, it could reinforce a blood libel narrative.
When it succeeds.
Yeah. Potentially lending credence to an HSN blame the Jews mantra, followed by, in other words, once they use murderous gangsters, big media pressure, debanking,
hard power,
all this stuff
power.
To totally destroy the rights of Americans to exercise free speech against a genocide, there might be actually some public relations blowback against the Jewish community for using that power.
Oh, gee, you think that might happen, huh?
And they say that at the lowest level, inadvertent violations of the rights of other Americans, even supporters of HSN and its HSOs, during the conduct of civic operations or activities could expose both individuals and Project Esther to liability. So they say inadvertent violations of the rights of Americans. So
they're going to try not to violate the rights, but they're going to do it.
It's going to happen. So finally, this is the big catch. They say for this to mitigate this, what they need is, and they put it in bold, Project Esther cannot be a solely Jewish effort.
It must
be an American effort. In other words, if it is a solely Jewish effort, this big strong-arm power move by them, it's going to lead to more anti-Semitism.
Right. And it also says specifically, without the influence of foreign powers.
Yes.
What?
Right,
like, come on.
Yeah.
We all know Israel. Like, what?
Yeah.
Well, Israel has nothing to do with this.
Israel is the Middle Eastern branch of world Jewry, and that's really what it comes down to.
Then it says, we have no need for DEI because we have no doubt Americans of all backgrounds will support Esther because it is righteous and reflects American values.
Right.
So we won't be doing the woke multiculturalism organized behind Jewry. We're going to do the based and red-pilled multiculturalism organized around Jewry.
And this tells you that the ultimate enemy really always is the goy, the butt goy who works with the Jews.
Right.
Because if isolated, they cannot succeed.
You know what? I'm surprised they put that in there because it's saying that they can't make this succeed without us.
Yes.
They
without white traitors and others who, like Richie Torres, who take money from Jews, like Fetterman, like the people like that. So again, the way to counter this is one, hold it up to the light of day because it's shocking the stuff that they admit to
Talk
in this document.
Talk about this document.
And the precedents that they're invoking.
Yeah.
Unashamedly. But second, to take the inverse of this, I mean, the Zionist support network in the United States, we need to be mapping it out the same way they do.
Yeah.
And we need to be using all the legal methods that they say they're going to use. We need to use those legal methods against them, target their influence, target their nodes, find out what's going on, discredit and delegitimize them, because the thing that they accuse the so-called Hamas support network, which is just people who are horrified by a genocide of women and children, the thing that they accuse us of is the thing that they themselves are actually doing as always with them. They cry out in pain as they strike you. They are the ones doing it. They're the ones with the huge foreign influence operation in the United States.
Yes.
And who are working against American interests and American sovereignty.
And they're admitting that they need us to do their bidding. So, let's just, hey, that's a good idea. Project Esther, let's just flip it on them.
We'll call it Project Eckhart after Dietrich Eckhart.